Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Welcome back to the Copywriters Podcast, episode 400, David. I can't believe we've made it this far, man.
I know. Isn't it something? Number 400.
Yeah. Yes, and a great way to start off the new year. And you've got something relevant to that topic, so let's jump into it.
I do. It's the day before, the day of the night before Christmas, as we put this on the air. New Year's is just 8-9 days away, and really a very unknown year looms ahead. One thing for sure, though, no matter what happens, the market will be more unforgiving in 2025 than it was in 2024. Why? It's simple. Competition keeps growing, and so does impatience among all consumers and mistrust among many of them. What this means to you as a copywriter is now more than ever, you can't afford to do a half-assed job on your copy. It sounds pretty bleak and terrifying, I know. But wait, what's that whooshing sound? It's Copywriters Podcast to the rescue. You see, we've put together 10 absolute musts for your copy to get to the tippy top chance of converting a sale. And we're going to share all of them today on the show and even in the show notes so you won't forget anything. Just as soon as you remember this, copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast. And most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. Okay, so you're ready for the 10 musts, Nathan?
I am, man. 10 seems like a lot to try and cram into one episode, so I'm going to do my best to just ride along with you.
Okay, let's ride. So, number one, remember your copy is about your prospect and how your product will improve their lives. It's not about you. It's not about your business. And it's not about your product. So, suppose you walked into a party and you find someone kind of full of themselves and they're talking about themselves nonstop. You'd probably avoid that person like the plague. Same thing applies to copy. When it's mostly about you, your company, your product, and not about the customer, well, that doesn't hold your prospect's interest very long, and it's sure not likely to sell anything. If you've got a good offer, you have every reason to be proud of it, and also good reason to be obsessed with every aspect of it. That makes sense. But when it comes to selling it, different priorities apply. Think of copy as a conversation with one person who needs what you offer. In your copy, you should be talking about what actually is important to them, not what you think should be important to them. Here's a quick example. It's tempting to say our innovative software uses cutting-edge algorithms, but prospects don't care. Here's a statement they do care about. You'll finish your monthly reports in half the time. This approach works because when prospects see themselves in your copy, they connect emotionally with the message. Don't beat your chest. It's obnoxious in copy. Instead, listen to the heartbeat of your prospect's desires and write in sync with that.
I think this is especially important when we're running paid traffic to our sales pages, to our sales copy. A lot of times that's going to be cold prospects or maybe lukewarm prospects. And it's kind of like going on a first date. And if you spend the whole first date talking about how impressive you are and how your job is so cool and all the things you've accomplished and the places you've been in the world, and you don't speak to or pay attention to what's important to the person on the other side of the table, you're not going to make the sale. And that's the point, I think, of this message.
Yeah. I mean, imagine a first date, a date. And so the other person says, well, tell me something about yourself. You say, well, I'm glad you asked. You pull out, here's my resume. Take a look at that. And then you put up your iPad And you say, and I'm going to give you a little slideshow, and this will show you all of my degrees and certifications and awards. That'd go over real well, wouldn't it?
That would not be a second date.
Yeah, that would be a first date and a last date all in one. All right. So must number two, make a list of the biggest objections your prospects will have, starting with the strongest and most common ones. Make sure your copy answers every one of the objections. Think of your prospect's mind, part of it, as a courtroom where your product is on trial. Every objection they have that you don't answer to their satisfaction, that objection becomes evidence for them against making the purchase. And you don't have to be disproven on anything. Reasonable doubt is all you need. Just one thing. So start by listing objections in order of importance. Usually, they're not all that unusual or unknown. Your list will probably include objections like, it's too expensive, or I don't have time to learn something new. Once you have your list, make sure you address each one of them in your copy. You don't have to answer all of them the same way. You could have a logical or fact-based answer for some of them. You could make comparisons with other products that they may also be considering and show why yours does things that the other ones don't do. You could use testimonials or case studies to answer other objections. The way this works is simple. What you're doing is removing psychological barriers before they become roadblocks. When prospects see their concerns addressed, their trust in your offer increases. Look at it this way. Every objection you haven't anticipated and addressed one way or another is going to cost you sales, and sometimes a lot of sales.
A lot of times, copywriters or business owners, they just want to ignore the objections altogether because they're like, if they're not thinking about it, I don't want to bring it up in my sales copy. But they are thinking about it, number one. And number two, handling those objections, sometimes it shows you where you can improve your offer. Oh, this is an objection I keep getting over and over again. Rather than ignore it, overcome it. Figure out a way to make your offer better so that that's no longer an objection. And that works way better than just ignoring the objections.
Yeah, and I want to comment on something you said about when business owners say, well, people aren't thinking about it. When business owners say people aren't thinking about these objections, they're right. Prospects are not thinking about them until they start to consider taking out their wallet, pulling out their credit card, and typing it in. Then they start to think of all the reasons they could get hurt. They could get scammed. They could get disappointed. This could be a bad purchase. So the objections might not come up initially. There are some people, you know, chronic mismatchers, polarity responders, who are going to come up with an objection if you say the earth is round and the sky is blue, right? But a lot of people are going to be very agreeable until it comes time to put their money on the table. And that's why you need to anticipate the objections up front and deal with them in the various ways we talked about. Yeah. Okay. Number three, write drunk, edit sober. Don't literally get drunk when you write. Just go wild when you write. Put all of your passion and your integrity into it, and then dial it back when you edit. Now, everyone thinks Hemingway says, write drunk, edit sober, but I'm not so sure he did. Did he drink a lot? You bet. But did he drink while he was writing? Here's what he said in a 1961 published interview. Interviewer, is it true that you take a pitcher of martinis up into the tower every morning when you go up to write? Hemingway cursed and then said, have you ever heard of anyone who drank while he worked? You're thinking of Faulkner. He does sometimes, and I can tell right in the middle of the page when he's had his first one. Besides, Hemingway added, who in hell would mix more than one martini at a time anyway? So what does it mean, the misunderstood saying, write drunk, edit sober? Well, think of a child finger painting. They don't worry about staying within the lines. They don't care what anyone thinks. They just paint. Same idea for your first draft. Go wild. As we boomers used to say back in the day, let it all hang out. That's what your first draft should be like. Just rant and rave and get it out. Don't worry about anything. Just get your words on paper or onto the screen. The main idea is to get out of your own way. And here's the psychological reason this works. It's almost impossible to be creative and critical at the same time. It's like trying to drive with one foot in the gas and one on the brake. Pick one, then the other. When you try and do both at the same time, you end up being stuck in one place. In fact, I'm going to say something scary. Let your first draft be bad. Even try and write something that's awful. Because you can fix that later. But you can't fix a blank page.
The thing that I keep in mind about this is it's hard to have two sides of your brain working at the same time. Your brain likes to be in one mode or the other. And if you're trying to do your editing while you're writing, a lot of times the brain has trouble switching from one hemisphere to the other. So keep it in one and just go full speed on that and then switch to the other and then go full speed on that. And your writing process will be a lot smoother.
I like that. I agree. That's good. Number four, sell results, not the process it takes to get the results. You can explain that process briefly later on, but first, focus on the results for the prospect because results are what they're buying. So imagine you wanted a power drill for a home remodeling project you're working on. What if the copy for the drill started this way? One, mark the exact drilling point with a pencil or marker using measuring tools if needed. Two, if drilling into wood, make a small indent with a nail or center punch to prevent the drill bit from wandering. Three, select the appropriate drill bit for your material and desired hole size. Four, secure the drill bit firmly in the chuck, ensuring that it's straight and tight. And the copy continued like that for six more steps. Would that entice you to buy the drill if that was the first thing you saw? Nobody buys a drill because they want to know the process, the best practices to use a drill. They don't. They buy a drill because they want to drill holes in their wall or something else. And we're not going, Nathan, I know you want to go down that serial killer's route. We're not going there, okay? So just forget about it. People want to know about the holes. That's the difference between process and results, at least at first. The only thing your prospect cares about is the result. Now let's take this into our world, something very common in direct response copy. Imagine two versions of copy for a weight loss program. Version A might detail the meal plans, exercise routines, weekly schedules. Version B might focus on the results. You can drop two dress sizes in 8 weeks, or your friends will ask what your secret is. Now, to be sure, after you talk about results, you might want to talk briefly and convincingly about what's different about your weight loss method. But you don't lead with that. And when you get there, you don't dwell on that. Another way to see this, again, with weight loss is before and after photos. Ever notice how nobody shows the middle part? The sweating, the new habits, the meal plans? No, they show the undesirable start and the amazing finish. That's contrast, and contrast is what works. The key thing to keep in mind here is people buy outcomes. They want the end result, the benefit, not what it takes to get there.
I'm going to give just a tiny bit of pushback that might not actually be pushback, and that is demonstrations. I have done a lot of sales copy where I included a slight or a small demonstration that included some of the stuff that you talked about. Put the drill bit here, put it here like this, and watch this. Turn on the vacuum, put the nozzle to the bowling ball, and watch this. So, and you did kind of say maybe add a little bit of it in there. I have noticed that just adding a tiny bit of demonstration that includes some of how it works does amazing for sales copy.
Yeah, it does. And if the demonstration is a wow by itself, that could even be the lead. If you start out with, you know, do you think your vacuum cleaner sucks, but only in the wrong way? Look at this. And you're lifting up a bowling ball. But the point is, when you do a demonstration, it's kind of more like proof. It's kind of more like the intellectual justification for the initial emotional claim. And demonstrations need to be exciting. I mean, you wouldn't do a demonstration of the 10 steps to drill a hole, but you know, if it could drill through concrete, you might do a demonstration of that because it's sort of amazing.
One last thing when it comes to drilling into things other than the walls, stuff we talk about outside of the podcast isn't supposed to make it into the podcast, David.
Okay. I forgot that rule. I apologize. Okay. Five. Oh, man. How can you do that to me? Five. Use the word you at least twice as much as you use the word me, my, us, ours, and your company and product name. We have two ears and one mouth for a reason. So look at most of the great ads in history and sales letters, and you'll notice the word you and your appear at least twice as often as the words that refer to the company, the people, the founder, the product, the spokesperson. And this isn't an accident. This is because the copywriter knew to keep the writing focused on the reader. Think about conversations, the same thing. When people go on and on about themselves, it gets really boring. But when they ask about you and your life, you lean in. Your copy should work the same way. The psychology behind this is simple. People care most about themselves. When you write you, readers mentally insert themselves into your copy. They begin to picture themselves enjoying the benefits you describe. Here's a practical way to test this. Take any piece of copy you've written. Highlight every you and your in yellow. Highlight every self-reference, we, our, company name, I, me, in blue. If you see more blue than yellow, rewrite it. If you see blue and yellow, it sounds like you're a supporter of Ukraine, which I am. Okay, an easy way to do this is to write as if you were writing a letter to one person about their life, their needs, and their desires.
One of my friends who's a copywriter, he does copy critiques occasionally. And when he sees this, we believe in this. We deliver a superior experience. We won the award for... He looks back at the copywriter and says, your wee-wee is showing.
Oh, that's extremely mature. I like that. That's good. All right. Number six, close all your loops. If you mention a problem, solve it. If you make a claim, prove it. Don't leave loose threads hanging. So copy is different than movies and fictional TV shows in one very important way. A movie will end a scene with a cliffhanger sometimes. Some of them never get solved and the movie is still good. Most TV series shows end every episode with a cliffhanger. A cliffhanger is one kind of open loop. And this is fine for that medium. One, what the TV and movie guys are doing is keeping your interest to get you to keep watching or to look forward to watching the next episode. With copy, you don't want unresolved issues dancing around in your prospect's mind every time you... No. With copy, you don't want unresolved issues dancing around in your prospect's mind when it comes time to ask them to take action. You want everything wrapped up in a bow, so there's no good reason not to click on the button. Let's go back to a favorite example, weight loss. Imagine reading this line, most weight loss programs fail. That's an open loop. It creates tension. The reader thinks, how come they do, and what makes yours different? If you don't answer that question before you ask for action, you've greatly hurt your chances of a sale or an opt-in. You could think of your copy like a mystery novel. Every clue needs to lead somewhere. Every question needs an answer. If you say, you might be wondering how this works, you better explain how it works. If you write, this system helped thousands of people, you need to show exactly how many people and share specific results. Take any piece of copy and read it like a skeptical prospect would. Circle every claim, underline every problem mentioned, then make sure every circle and underline has a corresponding solution or proof point, closing the loop. Remember, an open loop in your copy that you don't close before the close itself is like an open escape hatch from your sales funnel. A lot of people will take it.
Oh, I'm gonna ask about the one exception from this rule that I found, and that's email copywriting. A lot of times in email, my subject line will open that loop, and then I'll close that loop inside of the email, but I'll deliberately reopen another loop right at the end, and they have to click in order to close that loop, and that usually ups my click-through rate.
Yeah. So the rules I'm talking about here are for copy that's meant to close a sale. I think what you're doing is perfect. It's kind of an example of, you know, the episode of a show that has a cliffhanger, so you have to watch the next show. It's the same idea.
Mm-hmm. I think the difference is sometimes it's a sales email, and I would definitely follow this rule, but sometimes it's just a lift email. I'm just trying to lift them to the sales page, and then I definitely follow the rule on the sales page.
Yeah, that's a really good distinction. All right, number 7. Use people in your copy. Don't say, helps build muscle. Say, help Bob pack on 10 pounds of muscle. So some prospects are introverts, others are extroverts, but it doesn't matter. In either case, your prospect will almost always respond more to copy that includes people in it than to copy that just sticks to facts and numbers. Why? Because talking about people in your copy makes it seem more realistic. It's simple. You get better results when people are part of the picture. Instead of saying, our software cuts up to 75% of time off projects, use a human example like this. Sarah, who has a Shopify store selling custom housewares, cut her bookkeeping time from 6 hours down to 90 minutes with our software. First one, 75%, sounds abstract. Because it is. The example of Sarah brings the benefit to life. Same 75% time saving, but this example brings it to life in a way your prospects can identify with and imagine for themselves. It makes the same point, but this time there's a human involved. And the way this works is simply human nature. We're all wired for connection in one way or another. We learn from other people's experiences. We trust what others have tried and discovered. When someone like us achieves something we want to achieve, we believe that maybe we can too. Real stories make abstract benefits concrete. They transform features into experiences. They turn statistics into relatable human achievements. Remember, every claim becomes stronger when attached to a real person's story. But go the extra mile and get real stories from real people and written permission to use those stories in your copy.
I really don't have anything to add to it. I just want to emphasize how important it is.
All right, thanks. So number 8 is use proof early and often, right away if you can. People are skeptical and proof helps them relax so they can feel good about buying. Even if you think you are the most trustworthy person in the world, until people get to know you, which in this case usually includes having bought from you before, they are skeptical. Your job? To convince them what you are saying is true. Really, you need proof as soon as you can provide it. The good news is proof comes in many forms: testimonials, statistics, demonstrations, case studies, before after photos, media coverage, endorsements, awards, scientific studies. The key is using them early before doubt can take root in your prospect's mind. Let's examine how this works. Suppose you had a course preparing students for a difficult professional exam, like the bar exam or, you know, medical boards or something. Instead of beating your chest and stating that you are the best, use some stats like this, for example. 87% of our students pass their exam on the first try. Then follow up with real student testimonials and any other stats you have to confirm how good your course is. This principle applies across every type of copy. If you're writing about a fitness program, lead with documented results. If it's a business opportunity, start with verified income statements. If it's a product, begin with performance data. Think of proof as building blocks. Each piece stacks on the other, creating a foundation of credibility. Start your strongest proof point, the one that directly addresses your prospect's biggest concern. And I just had an idea. We should go to Lego with this. We could have proof Legos so people could create little proof structures. What do you think?
Maybe a new product coming soon from Copywriters Podcast.
That's right. Be on the lookout. Okay. Number 9, use lots of white space. One sentence paragraphs sometimes, maybe all the time. Make it easy to read. Large blocks of gray letters make your readers want to go away. Frequent line spaces, that can take you places. When you stack words on top of words, your readers' heads start to hurt. Their eyes glaze over, they stop reading and click away. It's really okay to have a lot of one sentence paragraphs. They're easy to read, and people are much more likely to keep reading that way. Because when you break it up like this, reading feels easy, natural, like taking small bites of food instead of stuffing it in your mouth. The next time you write, try this test. Take your big blocks of text and cut them up. Make each thought stand out on its own. Give it room.
I think of just the psychology of a reader when they see a sales page with big walls of text. It looks like a lot of work, and they'll click away. I've done tests on bounce back rates. When you hit a wall of text, people just bounce back. They click away. They close the browser. But when you make it look like it's just a little bit, a small bite at a time, What's the old saying? How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. That's what you got to think of when you're doing your copy.
Yeah, really good way to look at it. And I'm glad you brought some test experience to this because, you know, there's so much counter-programming to this in what we've been taught and, you know, what we see in books. And sometimes people feel it's wrong to write really short paragraphs, but not in copy and really not in anything. I mean, there's really no excuse.
Our friend Jason Parker brings up a good point often, too. More and more people are reading copy on cell phones now. So that used to be kind of a wall of text turns into the Great Wall of China text. And so it's even more important now to break it up into smaller chunks because the way people are reading is on a different format. So it's even more important.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Man, we ought to do something maybe someday about writing to be read on a cell phone, seriously, because it's probably more to it than that. But anyway, glad you brought that up. All right, number 10, write your headline last of all. Sometimes you really don't know what your copy is about until you've written it. You'll have a better headline if you know what it's leading into before you write it. So a lot of copywriters start with their headline and then figure out where to go from there. And that's a big mistake. Think about it. How can you sum something up if you don't know what it is? When you first write your copy, magic happens. You get clarity on what it's about that you didn't have before you started writing. When you go back to write your headline, you've got a lot more to work with. You might have come up with a bullet point that gives you a better angle than you could think of before, or you might have a new perspective, or the magic of intuition can do its thing and give you something really great. So try this. Write first, headline last. See how it works for you. Okay.
Before we jump into the recap, I generally, when I'm starting off a piece, I'll have an idea for a headline or I'll have an idea for a big idea that I want to use, but I always have it as a placeholder and I'm always willing to, and most of the time I find myself needing to go back after the copy is written and then try a couple of different headlines, and I usually come up with something better. So even if you start with the headline, always be open to go back and rework it once the copy is done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's possible to start with a headline if you think you know, but yeah, like you said, sometimes you discover different things as you're moving forward. Okay, so would you like a recap?
Absolutely, let's do it.
Okay, number 1, Remember, your copy is about your prospect and how your product will improve their life. It's not about you, your business, or your product. Number two, make a list of the biggest objections, starting with the strongest and most common. Make sure your copy answers every one of those objections. Three, write drunk, edit sober. Don't literally get drunk. Just go wild when you write. Put all your passion and intensity into it and dial it back when you edit. Four, sell results, not the process it takes to get the results. You can explain the process briefly later on, but focus on the results for the prospect. That's what they're buying. Five, use the word you at least twice as much as the words me, my, us, ours, and your company and product name. We have two ears and one mouth for a reason. Six, close all your loops. If you mention a problem, solve it. If you make a claim, prove it. Loose ends that don't get tied up lead to sales that don't happen. Seven, use people in your copy. Don't say helps build muscle. Say helped Bob pack on 10 pounds of muscle. Eight, use proof early and often. Right away if you can. People are skeptical and proof helps them relax so they can feel good about buying. Nine, use lots of white space. One sentence paragraph sometime. Maybe all the time. Make it easy to read. And 10, write your headline last. Sometimes you don't really know what your copy is about until you've written it. You'll have a better headline if you know what it's leading to before you write it.
Man, that was like almost a masterclass all in one episode, David.
Thank you. I'll take that.
All right. If you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, we have 400 other episodes because I think we did episode zero. So this is actually 401 episodes that we've put together so far over at copywriterspodcast.com. Go there, check them out. You'll get a ton of value, and happy new year as we close this episode out.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have much to do between Christmas and New Year's, it's like 7 days, might as well listen to
every single episode.
Yeah, like listen to 6 copywriters podcasts a day and you'll finish early.
Nice. All right. So copywriterspodcast.com. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.